pop in here for a couple minutes? I can say hello to you. Mr. Wonstadt.
Dave Wonstadt.
I see light mango.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here and Dave Wonstadt. There's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
Dave Wonstadt, one of my, you know, really idols.
Super Bowl champion.
These guys, it's tough to get any, you can see it's tough to get any serious work done here, but...
Football analyst for NBC Sports and the Marquee Network.
Long season. I almost thought we had a long ball during this interview, but we...
I want to see some home runs. I'm looking at the pregame stats. I'm seeing this guy from Cincinnati's getting the most home runs. Come on, let's go.
Coach, you got to look at the flags. That's really what's going on here.
Pour me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only half past 12. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yes, it is. I would say probably like maybe Puerto Rico, it's 5 o'clock right now. Maybe,
oh, that's a good question.
Maybe Caracas, Venezuela, it is 5 o'clock right now.
You can look that up. And while you do, let's welcome in Dave Wonstadt, shall we?
Yeah, Bears training camp coverage on the score is presented by Chevy Drive Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Now, Speegs, imagine. Last week, I see our guy, Dave Wonstadt, and I'm like, man, I get to watch a little bit of practice with Wonnie when I go up there.
Yeah, you're thinking you guys can be on the sidelines together?
Because that's my guy, right? Sure. Like we've watched a lot of football together. That's my guy, and getting a chance to watch training camp with him would be a joy.
But you couldn't.
But I couldn't. Because I was behind the ropes, and this man was in front of him. And I looked out, and I was like, I got to find my guy. I get on binoculars, and I go, there's my guy right in the middle of the drills. Coach, you were locked in on Bears practice last week, right in the middle of it. What did you see?
Well, I got to be on. It's great being on with you guys. And just for our listeners' sake here, in a couple weeks I'll be on every week, every Thursday at 5. So I'm giving myself a little promo there, just looking ahead.
Please. That's great work out of you. Thank you, Coach. Somebody, we look forward to it.
Somebody's got to do it. But I come on, Alex, get it going. But I tell you, I would say that Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles were fantastic to me. You know, I started texting Ben a little bit back and forth after he got the job. And, you know, I told him I didn't want to come up there and see guys, you know, practice in their underwear. When you're going to put the pads on and you're going to hit somebody, let me know. And he gave me the best day. He says, Coach, this is the day you want to be here. You got back. So we went back and forth. And, yeah, and I actually watched, you know, a lot of the practice with Ryan Poles. We were walking around a little bit and talking about, you know, some situations and players and so forth. So it was really, really great to be there, feel welcome. And just like Lawrence was saying, I watched the linemen at first, and then I worked my way over to the backs, and then obviously the quarterbacks and the skill guys. So I had a pretty good feel for what was going on, and it was exciting. It was very, very good. I thought it was a good practice and good staff. And you know what's interesting is I was in Ben's office. We were talking before practice, and the first thing he said to me, I was just small talking, and he says, "Hey, Coach, you know what? I got a great coaching staff," and because I commented on some of the guys, obviously that I know. And he just talked about how much he trusted Dennis Allen and the experience that he had, and very similar to staffs that I've been involved with. I don't think we hired anybody that I didn't work with, Tony Wise didn't work with, so they were all connected at places where we coach because we knew not just how good a coach they were, but you want to know what type of people they are and how they're going to react when things are good, how they're going to react when things are bad. And I saw that on the field. So it was a very productive day, great day.
It sounds like a productive day of seeing football and kind of establishing some relationships and reestablishing some. We love that you'll be with us on Thursdays at 5 o'clock. Is that right, Alex? I have that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, you
yes.
might want to let us know, but you know, it's just a thought.
It's okay.
Maybe we just made that decision. You know, right now I don't know. Did we?
We locked it in, Coach. But
okay.
Tell us about talking to Ryan Poles, because you had a good relationship with Matt Eberflus, and now here's Ryan Poles having withstood that exodus, and now with a head coach in charge, it sure seems like Ryan Poles is comfortably letting Ben Johnson be the boss, which I think NFL or the head coach needs to be the boss. So tell us about that interaction and what you think of the dynamic.
Yeah, I don't know if that term is correct or not. You know, I don't know who you know, I think they're working together. I mean, I was complimenting Ryan. The first drill they had live, inside run, I saw the offensive line moving the defensive line, okay? And so I started talking to Ryan a little bit about acquiring those guys, and very interesting, obviously, behind the scenes, because we got three quality offensive linemen that all have years yet to play and played at a high level. And I was just saying, hey, well, you did a fabulous job, in my opinion, of getting these guys locked in and getting them done quick. And we talked about that whole situation. And so, you know, he's the personnel guy. I think it's a situation where Ben's going to tell him what he needs, what he likes. And then Ryan is going to, you know, fill in the spots. I think that's how it has to work. So I think it's a good situation for both of them right now.
Coach, since you got an up-close look, what does Trapillo look like? And does he still have work to do to be a professional? Or do you see a guy that if they had to, they could play him week one?
Well, I think he could definitely play week one. There would be no question in my mind about that. I think that, you know what I liked? I was over there with the offensive line, and when they went from one drill to the next, generally you go over there and the younger guys are going to hold the bags and so forth. And you got to tell these guys three times what to do it so you can run an effective drill. Okay. And when they ran over there, this guy grabbed the bag. He was lined up where he was supposed to be. And had his mouthpiece in and his chin strap buckled. And he was ready to go to work. And that tells me that you got a player that first time hasn't been in an NFL camp, first time he hasn't been exposed to this, and he's in. I mean, you know, he's not, you know, looking around in the crowd and the music. No, this guy's here to work. And you know, I think the background he has up there with Bill O'Brien, you know, it's a pro background, obviously. Bill O'Brien, long, long time head coach in the NFL and Patriots. So I think he's had good exposure to the NFL and the way things are done. And I saw that right away. And, yes, in the drills, he's a good athlete. He needs work. He's going to get better. But I think it's not going to be too big for him. I'll say that.
Coach, is this a game week? There's a game on Sunday.
But really, there's a game on Friday.
Well, yeah, so because there's a joint practice on Friday. Like, what is this week, you know, from your perspective, how is it supposed to feel for the players and the coaches? How would it feel to you?
Well, you know, they did kind of a dry rehearsal last week when they went to Soldier Field. I didn't realize they stayed down there. I was listening to some of the player comments afterwards in meetings and so forth, like it's going to be on a road game. Yeah, this is going to be different, obviously, because it's going to be on TV and it's going to be filmed and it's against another team. So all this stuff will happen. It's just a shame that they couldn't get like a Tuesday. I always like to get at least two practices with the other team, you know, at least two, because it's going to be different looks. It's going to be different coverages, different people. And you'd like to have them put them out there and see how they react to something new and get a chance to coach it off of tape a little bit. So it'll be good that they're doing one day, but one day, 2 days before the game, I don't know. You know, what I expect is the veterans not to play in the preseason game much, if at all. But I do expect them to get the majority of the work against the Dolphins.
Coach, what do you think of what Ben Johnson, he's admitted to that the defense, like he's liked the fact that Dennis Allen has thrown some stuff at Caleb and at the offense to make them uncomfortable. How do you feel about that as a something that, that helps the quarterback learn and adjust?
Yeah, it's good. It's all good. We've talked about this in the past. I mean, the defense is always going to be a little bit ahead of the offense because they got less to learn. And we got a veteran, you know, we got three new offensive linemen, maybe four, you know. We got a lot of new bodies on offense compared to the defense. And for a couple of reasons, you expect them to be ahead. And Dennis Allen has surrounded himself with guys that he has worked with before. So I don't, and so has Ben on offense. But you don't see the coaches having to coach the coaches. And by that, I mean, when they went to the receiver drill, Randall L., he knows what's coming because he was what they were together at Detroit, you know. So and you don't see Ben having to overcoach some of his assistants to make sure that it's the same message that he wants. So you save a lot of time as a staff that way. I mean, opposite of Matt Eberflus coming in and having an offensive coordinator that he never worked with, and he's seeing it kind of for the first time. I mean, I've never been in that situation before. I mean, that makes it very difficult from a head coach's perspective, in my opinion. Where Ben, you know, like I was talking to Dennis a long time, and watching what they do, it's going to be more pressure. I think if you compare the two defenses, you know, Dennis is more man coverage, and Dennis is a little bit more pressure than what it was in the past with Matt Eberflus.
So tell us about talking with Dennis and like his concepts and what you think of his concepts and the way he does it in the modern game, Coach.
Yeah, well it's two things. One, you know, he's going to be, like I say, he's going to be a little bit more pressure. His pressures are going to come a little bit more with the safeties. Eberflus, you know, when he brought pressure, he liked Tyler Gordon coming off the slot. Dennis Allen will bring some corner pressures, you know, a little bit more. So it's, you know, it's a lot of carryover that way. But I think that he's threatening with the blitz almost every play. When I was watching those guys go team period, you know, it's linebackers up in the line of scrimmage, safeties walking up, then bailing out, linebackers bailing. So it's a lot of movement stuff before the snap. Makes a quarterback do some thinking. And the other side of that coin is you better have a good secondary, because if you can't cover and you're playing that man coverage, you're in trouble. So, you know, we feel good about Johnson. We feel good about Gordon. Brisker's having a great camp. You know, I think the position when I was there that was still I don't want to say unsolved, but the one position that was still a battle was the other corner spot. You know, with Tariq Stevenson, and then you had Terrell Smith got an interception the day that I was there. He's having a very good camp. So that's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have, but you have to, if you're going to pressure more and you're going to play more man, you have to have guys back there that can cover one-on-one. And I think they're pretty confident about our guys back there.
So who are the players that caught your eye? Because a coach's eye is a little bit different than the rest of us. So are there any players that you saw that you were like, oh, I didn't think that player could do blank, or, wow, this player has been super impressive today?
Well, I'll tell you what, Billings is back inside, and he is a, you know, a run stopping fool, and I think they missed him a little bit last year. And I made a comment to one of their coaches there without naming them about him being back, and they said, yeah. And we are excited to have him back. So Billings, you know, from a fan's perspective. And then I'll tell you what, Brisker, I don't know how he does it, but he made two plays when I was there. And you talk about a mystery man. You know, I mean, after four games last year, you know, it was concussion time and never came back. I think people were uncertain if he'd ever play again or what was his situation going to be. And he's back to playing like he did before he got hurt. I mean, he's making plays. And it just so happens the day that I was there, they threw the ball to a Burden a few times, the rookie receiver and out of Missouri, and he made some nice plays. He did break away from people, and so they were trying to highlight him, I think, a little bit more that day. So and then as a group, I would say the offensive line as a group caught my attention. I mentioned running it and pass. And let me tell you this, and I said this draft week, because I was up at Rutgers last year, and I talked to this kid, and I was with him with helping Shiano out for a couple of days. Tell you what, Hal Mungai, or how, you know, I think I pronounced his name.
Mungai.
Right there. Mungai. This guy right here is going to play opening week, guys. And here's going to be the question to him, and I was talking to Ryan about this. He's not going to give you the 40 or 50 yard run, but he it's very tough for him to get for my man Kyle to get tackled in the backfield. He can make guys miss in a short area, but he's going to get 2 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards. So with him at running back, keep an eye on this. You're not going to get the 40 or 50. You're going to be able to move the ball down the field, but you are going to be in a lot of third down and ones, twos, and threes. So that's a decision, and I'll be anxious to see how that unfolds. Are you content to move the ball down the field with that type of mentality? Or if you need the big play and you're always looking for the big play, then the only back that I saw that can do that is Swift. And, you know where I stand with the Andre Swift. You know?
So Kyle Mungai, he's got to make the team first. Seventh rounder.
He's making it. Coach, he's making the team. Book it.
All right, good. Good. I've been worried. I've had somebody in my ear in the room telling me that might be a concern, you know? But yeah,
if he gets cut, somebody's going to grab him. He's not. I mean, I think he did it, you know, enough that day. And at Rutgers, the guy was in the top three in rushing every year. The guy doesn't fumble. Look at his fumbles when he played college ball.
Not one.
I mean, thank you. This guy is going to give you a chance to move the chains and make plays. And it'll be tough. I mean, him and Roschon Johnson, there's a battle going on, you know? And that's going to be the battle at running back. Swift's going to make the team because of his explosiveness and catching and so forth. But I think the other battle is between those two guys.
It is 670 The Score. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. How was your time at Wrigley Field the other night? I'm sorry the Cubs didn't get you more offense, but did you have a good time up there?
I'll tell you what, I had a great time. Absolutely. You know, I mean, all the people were – everybody that does something on the marquee station, Tom Waddle was there, Jeff Joniak was there. So it was great. We were up in the suite, and Diane Penny, you know, the general manager, we had the full. It was outstanding. Did a little promo work, but you're right. Now here's the one problem I had, and I said this too. I don't know who. I think it was Wild or somebody. I said, look behind me. I'm sitting outside trying to watch this game, and I was the only one out there for like the first three innings. Everybody's back there eating and talking, and I says, I don't go to many sporting events and sit in the stands, right? Or, you know, it's just never what I did. Is this how it goes on in a football game? And they says, oh, yeah, everybody's watching the TVs and eating and drinking. And so I was trying to watch the game, and that's when they were talking about the pitcher gave up more home runs than any pitcher in Major League Baseball this year so far. So I says, this is going to be home run derby. Well, anyway, you know, 3-1 we lose, but – it is what it is.
God bless you for trying to watch the game, though. I don't like the suites, Coach. I don't like it up there because most people aren't watching the game. You're right.
I kept looking over my shoulder, like thinking I was missing something. Why am I sitting out here? You know how far it's come. When I was coaching the Bears, I want you to think about this.
Okay.
When I was coaching the Bears, Mr. McKenna, Andy McKenna, was part owner of the Bears and part owner of the Cubs. He would get us a big suite. His suite, you know, on the first baseline there. And I would, once a year, and I would take my whole coaching staff, and we would sit out on the balcony and smoke cigars. Okay? And obviously he had all the trimmings, and Tony Wise couldn't wait for the dessert tray and the whole bit. but we would sit there and we would be out there having cigars watching the Cubs play.
Oh, hell
think
yeah.
Think about that, guys.
That sounds good, Coach. Sounds good.
It's a beautiful thing. Coach, we appreciate you. Thank you so much, and we're happy that you're going to be with us every Thursday.
At 5 o'clock, make sure someone write that down for Alex so he has it. Okay,
Tanner, you write that down for Alex.
Write that down for Alex so he knows. Coach Wanstead, right. Thursdays 5 o'clock on the Spiegel and Holmes show.
Didn't mean to bother you.
See you later, Coach.
Right.
That's our guy, Dave Wanstead. He's awesome. When we come back, Spiegs sat down with a Cub last night. I want to hear all about it. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog.
We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah, I'm
going to count you down, okay?
In three, two, one. So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah. Afternoons on The Score.
Chad, I just want to be clear. With the next couple weeks, are you discussing third base a lot internally?
So well done. Matt Shaw and Matt Spiegel got together last night at Wildfire for the Cubs on Deck series. How'd that go?
So well. I love that series. Appreciate Wildfire and Huntington Bank for putting it together. And, you know, it's 60 minutes with a Cub in a room with like 70 people, 75 people, and you're not broadcast. And so it can get comfortable. It can get funny. That dude was really good. I did not expect him to be a great talker in that setting. I have not really talked to him much in the clubhouse. I don't know if you have or if any of our guys have, but he was funny. He was smooth. He was self-aware. He was comfortable. He was easy to like and easy to believe in. You know what I mean? You could see it from the scouting perspective. It's like, oh, I get why everybody has always liked you. I get that. That's just coming off him. He brought up the dropped pop-up on his own from yesterday.
What did he say about it?
After, because I was praising a question about praising his defense. He's like, oh, you didn't. Must not have seen the game today. Then.
Where are your flip downs at, son?
He said he didn't lose it in the sun.
Liar.
He said I just missed it. Didn't lose it. Lawrence Holmes said he didn't lose it in the sun. He just missed it. And in the Q&A later, you'd like this, that a dude asked him about Dansby calling him off of a pop-up the night before. And because it clearly looked like Shaw was a little miffed at that. And he was talking about it. And he said, no, Dansby's got it right for all those balls, especially because he knows how it plays there. And he said, you got to understand, at dusk at Wrigley, you can lose the ball like that. Like, if you look down, when you look back up, no baseball. It's gone at dusk at Wrigley. So Dansby didn't look down, just took it and got out of, and Shaw got out of his way. Massachusetts kid, loved Pedroia growing up. That was his guy, was Dustin Pedroia.
Petey.
And then when he got to high school, it was Mookie. It was all about Mookie. And so those are two pretty good models.
If you're gonna start thinking about baseball players to model yourself after, and you're that size,
mm-hmm.
those are two really good guys to do that.
Yeah, I think so. The laser show of Pedroia's BP, and then Mookie's just is everything.
Mookie is an all-around player.
Yes.
One of the best of this generation.
We talked lots of mechanics and his need to make so many changes in a short time in his life. You know, he had to make the changes at the beginning of the year when they sent him back down to Iowa. And so I ran down them just to be sure. I'm like, all right, Matt, let's talk about this, because he brought him up. I'm like, when you went down to the minors, you stood more upright. He's like, yeah. I'm like, did you get a little closer to the plate? He's like, yeah, a little. And you lessened the leg kick, right? He said, yeah. Is that anything else? No. And I said, well, what'd you learn? He said, I didn't realize that the leg kick was affecting so many other parts of my swing. So Mr. Validation, Lawrence Holmes, I set that. Mm-hmm. Set that. Yes, and Ron Coomer as well.
Well?
He hadn't realized that the leg kick was affecting the head and other parts of his swing.
Yeah, it's pretty dramatic, that leg kick of his.
Yeah, not anymore. Not anymore.
And not anymore, but when he was coming up, like, it's like, oh, wow, that can be exploited. And it was. Well, and he fixed it. And I'm glad that the Cubs sent him down there and he did the work. And that it's working out for him. And this this thing that's happened, like while a lot of the other guys in the Cubs lineup have been ice cold since the All-Star break, it hasn't been Matt Shaw.
Because there was another batch of adjustments before the All-Star break when they sat him down for those 3 days. And a lot of us were like, ooh, maybe they don't believe in Matt Shaw. Maybe they're going to be up there in the Suarez conversation or whatever. What was happening is that they were giving him more adjustments. And I asked him, like, did you stand more upright? And he said, yeah. I said, were your hands higher? He said, yeah. So your bat was flatter on the shoulder? He said, yeah. And I said, a little bit more of an open stance? And he said, yeah, that was the big one. So he opened his stance up, and that kind of changed his ability to turn on the inside stuff and to turn on stuff with power. And you've seen, like, the power and the slug has exploded for Matt Shaw since the break, and that stuff is why.
I'm happy that it's worked out for him, and his defense, dropping the pop-up is whatever. His defense has been pretty terrific at third base. From an eye test, I haven't looked at any of the fielding stats on this, but just from an eye test, he's looked pretty comfortable. He's made good throws. He's made some plays that I wasn't quite sure he was capable of.
Me too. And then we just talked a bunch of, you know, lighter stuff, which was fun. He said the funniest teammate is Seiya Suzuki in a nonverbal way.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
Like he said, just like constantly, Seiya will walk by you and do something, and it just breaks you up, like time after time after time. He's got a young wife. They're very young. Both of them, obviously. She was there. They're adorable. Christine met the wife beforehand, and you know, Christine's a good OG wife to talk to them about marriage, and some of that was going on. So Shaw said his wife likes to come on road trips, likes to travel on some, but not on the bad road trips, like
Milwaukee,
Tampa, St. Louis.
St. Louis, Alex Kuhn, you are a winner.
It's hot and muggy.
And
there's nowhere to eat.
There's nothing to do. There's probably some stuff to do, but
Pharaoh's Donuts, downtown St. Louis. If you're going to go see Cubs and Cardinals this weekend, Pharaoh's Donuts.
And don't forget, Pappy's Smokehouse.
That's exactly right.
But Matt Shaw burying St. Louis last night.
St. Louis. Yeah. So boring.
There it is. He also said that somebody asked a question at the end about the social interactions at first base, right? And he had a couple stories which killed me about the social interactions. One, he said, Carlos Santana, the 16-year veteran for Cleveland. So Carlos Santana was just looking at him like, how long have you been in the big leagues? And he's like, I'm a rookie. It's my first time. Santana just nodded, you know, and Shaw takes off on a lead, comes back. Santana's not saying anything, takes off on a lead. Another batter comes. Shaw takes off on a lead, comes back. And then there's three outs. And as Santana's running off, he looks at Matt Shaw and he says, I've been in the league for 16 years.
I love that as a question from the person at Wildfire. Like, we should be setting Nico up with that. We should, you know, game plan and scout the opponent. Like, hey, what do we want to know at first base this week? And like, that's really good.
All right, do we think that means that Carlos Santana was expecting Matt to be like,
that's what I
how
thought.
About you? How long you been in the bigs?
Yeah, like, this is what we do here. I talk to you about how long you've been in the bigs, and then you ask me. And Carlos Santana's waiting on the question. It doesn't come. And then kind of passive-aggressively, he's like, I've been in the league 16 years. So, doesn't say anything else, just runs off
the
field.
So now we know why Carlos Santana, other than the paycheck, is hanging around, still raking and getting on base. He just likes being a big leaguer.
He likes being asked
about it.
Well, speaking of that, the other social interaction that Shaw brought up. Is that great? He brought up, he said, catchers. Some catchers will be like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, welcome in, right? Like, Lawrence, you were a catcher.
I didn't do any of that.
But it's, I'm not really surprised. But it depends.
I will say as a batter, I did. Okay. As a batter, my first at-bat catch, what's up? How you doing?
Right.
Everything all right?
Well, Matt says there's some catchers around the league that are like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? They say hello. So Adley Rutschman of the Orioles, they had the first moment like, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good. Thank you. And then, you know, Matt did his thing, and then he comes up again, and he comes up again the third time, and Adley Rutschman's looking at him again with this big smile on his face like, And Matt's thinking, like, we already said hello. We already did this. Like, what are we?
Oh, I love that. You know I'm not a fan of the repeat hellos throughout the course of a day.
Third at bat in, like, the fifth or sixth inning, and Rutschman's looking at him like, hey, we're having a moment.
What's up, buddy?
And Matt's like, no, I'm just playing the game now. I'm kind of done with all that. But he said he's since found out that Adley Rutschman must be just a very nice man. A very kind, nice man.
I know there are some batters, if they know the catcher well, they'll tap their shin guards in their first at bat just to say what's up to them, like that sort of thing. Like there's a lot, but yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Adley's like looking for a friend. Yeah, I don't know.
That's the thing. It just revealed so much about both those stories, revealed so much about them as people, didn't it? Adley's just like, hey, how are you?
But the other thing is like if you're Matt Shaw, like you're trying to like navigate this entire ecosystem.
Yes.
So you're like, yes. I'm also trying to play baseball.
Right. I'm trying to focus on that.
Yeah. So I don't know what some of the social cues are.
Totally.
And I want to make sure I get them right. But I'm also trying to not get picked off of first base.
Yes. I'm trying not to get, you know, blown away by a fastball at 98 over my eyes.
Correct. So yeah. I can see like multiple sides of this of like Adley Rutschman be like, hey, what's up, man? Yeah. Hey, I remember you from a couple of innings ago. What's up, man? How you been?
You still doing good? You were doing good a couple innings ago.
How's this going for you?
Everything's still all right for you? Yeah. It's just, man. Like,
and then Matt Shaw, like in his mind, be like, why are you looking at me? This is, like, weirdo?
These socially awkward moments in the middle of a baseball game just made me giggle. So, yeah, enjoyed him very much and his willingness to share some of that stuff. Because he's a kid out there trying to figure it all out, man.
So what you're saying is that the Cubs on Deck series is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I love when we do those kind of things.
So what you're saying
Baseball After Dark.
So if we were, let's say, at the Budweiser Brick House in Wrigleyville.
Oh, yeah.
And someone wanted to come and see us interact themselves with Nico Horner.
I would strongly recommend it.
On August 9th. Yes. And realize
19th even.
19th, sorry. August 19th. And realize that we are going to be on from 10 until 2.
Whoa, show swap.
Yeah, we're doing a show swap so that we can be there where Nico is going to be with us on August 19th at noon. That someone who will want to come to that On Deck series powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago, visit your local Verizon store today. They should call right now to 312-540-0670. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
If you're caller number 6, you're going to come and hang out with us and Nico.
Yeah, let me tell you, and that one will be broadcast. And that's, I mean, but you'll get to meet Nico and hang out, and he's like, he'll be totally cool during the breaks and stuff, because that's just like who he is. And this thing last night, there were some contest winners sitting right there at the table with Christine. It was like, and they were talking about stuff. It's like, that's... So if you're listening and you're like, oh man, sometimes they have contests. Sometimes they end up being really cool events, and then we get to meet you and get to hang out. So
August 19th, Brick House Tavern.
Yep.
Noon for Nico. Us 10 to 2 that day, switching out with middays for just that day.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna have ourselves a time, and we hope that you are the person that won.
And so, yeah, I mean, add them to the list. There's like a pile of very congenial and likable dudes on that particular team.
Now, I agree with you. That's that clubhouse. Like, I was over there a couple of weeks ago. I was there. It's a very friendly vibe. And I'm a helicopter guy. Like, I'm not there every day. But even talking to the people that are there every day, it's like, yeah, this group is a good group to be around and deal with.
Now, we'll see how many games they can win.
And we'll see if it changes. We'll see if it changes now that there's some pressure on this group.
But, you know, it's funny because, like, we were talking about that with him, and he's just a rookie, but he's like, as solid as our group is, like, everybody's just the same dude each day. Like, it's just...
That's good.
There's just no questions asked, and everybody comes in. Yeah, I mean, things can get tighter in a season. We've all seen that. Do we get any confirmation that they went out and did Craig set up the party at a karaoke bar? Like, did anything happen? Last night would have been the night to do it.
It's been a good night because it's a short trip. You can make it in 45 minutes after everything is packed up and all that stuff. Because where would you rather hang out? Would you rather hang out in Chicago or St. Louis?
I'll let my sewage be the answer to that. My sewage tells me the answer, and my sewage goes to St. Louis before I do.
They've got legitimate beef about that. That's legitimate. I don't like a lot of things about St. Louis.
Yeah, just stop there.
But they've got legitimate beef about that.
I don't know.
It's legit.
We should
apologize.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because we were better at engineering in the early 1900s? It's
kind of a sinister way to do engineering. Here, take all of our sewage, St. Louis.
Yeah, just go ahead.
Enjoy that.
You take it.
Yeah.
You have it. We don't want it.
And have it shape the history of your city. That's a legit beef that they have, and they have earned it.
I don't know, sir. I'm just going to rejoice in my Chicago summer. Thank you very much.
It's pretty nice, right?
Enjoy the crystal clear water out there. In the lake.
I was driving through the city last night down here during the fireworks. Folks, we got to stop parking on the shoulder of Lakeshore Drive. It's a little dangerous. Someone was parallel parking on the shoulder of Lakeshore Drive.
Just stop and watch the Navy Pier fireworks.
Yes. Like, sir.
Yeah, that ain't right.
That's not what you're supposed to be doing. When we come back, we need to do a follow-up on Kyle Tucker. Let's discuss that next here on The Score.
Do you know the words to Go Cubs Go yet?
Like the full song? Yeah.
You do?
For the most part. My nephew's like 2, and my sister always sends us like videos of him playing his like little guitar, just kind of strumming
That's
it
so
and
cute.
Just singing the like Go Cubs Go song and stuff.
Do you want to sing any of it?
I'm good right now. Oh. Singing after the game when we win.
Okay.
That's Kyle Tucker with Elise Menneker on the 120 seconds thing that they do over there on Marquee. And Kyle Tucker's showing a lot of personality in that, to me. It's a lot of connection to Chicago, including his nephew, who sings along. Oh. And the family sends Kyle and his wife videos of the nephew singing along to Go Cubs Go. He's so feeling it.
So they'll send videos of him singing Sweet Caroline next year. It's a creepy song.
Why would they do that when he's here with the Cubs? Why would they do that?
Because he's playing right field for the Red Sox next year.
Whoa! Whoa! You take that back. Operation Wu King Tuck is emboldened after a couple things from yesterday.
Maybe he goes back to Houston, you know? Maybe they'll keep Correa down there and they get the band back together. They realize the AL is wide open.
You hear the way that Kyle talked about the weather down there? No chance. He said it's like 100 degrees down there. He's done. He's done with Houston. Dismissive.
They're playing better baseball, though.
The Astros, actually, they're scuffling a little bit. You don't notice it as much because the Mariners haven't jumped up and stormed the way that the Brewers have jumped up.
Well, I will tell you, Speaks, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
Whatever, Tony.
That is still one of the best drops ever.
It's really amazing.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, they've got a 2-game lead on Seattle right now.
Yeah, so you're noticing it a little bit. And if you've noticed it, believe me, Steve Stone has noticed it.
He didn't say that to me.
The Astros are 24-21 since the 15th of June.
Similar to the Cubs.
Yeah, Cubs are 23-20. And the Mariners are 27-19.
How about that Rangers squad?
Similar to the Brewers at 32-10. Rangers 25-20. Yeah, the Rangers squad, they've got arms, man.
Interesting little team they got there.
Whew, they got big-time starting arms. If they get in, they're going to be terrifying.
The Sox are emerging as a wagon.
Brad Biggs talks baseball with you.
I like when he talks baseball.
So, Lawrence, I checked in with this yesterday. I want to make sure some of the earlier listeners in this time slot hear it. A baseball source who knows the finances of the league extremely well told me yesterday, or the other day, 2 days ago, that he believes Kyle Tucker's contract will have a 4 in front of it. Not a 5, not a 6. It will have a 4 in front of it. And in fact, he bet me dinner. This source bet me dinner.
Steak dinner. Boom.
That was going to be the reality.
Have you already started thinking about like what your dinner might be if you were to win this bet?
No, but that's a good question because it's a good source.
So like, do you really make the source like pay for it if they're wrong? Do you say, hey, you know what? RPM Seafood seems like a really good choice.
Here's what I think the move is in terms of working relationships.
You pick it up.
I pick it up. I make a big deal about, yep, time for our dinner. Time for our dinner. Where we go, oh, yeah. And then I make it someplace expensive. But then I pick it up at the end, no matter what.
I think that's a good call.
Right? Because we want to try and keep sources in this business. So do you think that's going to happen?
No.
That his number has a four?
No. But hearing Jeff Passan kind of second that thought that the number could be like 450. Here's the other question. The question that we keep walking by on this. Let's say, because everyone wants to, now everyone's pro-management, and they want that number to be real cheap on Kyle Tucker. I'm pro-labor. I want Kyle Tucker to make as much money as he possibly can. Mm. But let's say that the number is 450.
Okay.
How confident are you that the Cubs are willing to pay it?
Well, this is when...
Since everyone wants to cheapen his deal, and everyone's like, well, you know, he hasn't been very good. Maybe the Cubs can get him at a discount.
Why don't you want Cub fans to have nice things? What's that about?
I do want them to ask you that. I want them to have nice things and for Kyle Tucker to get paid.
Yeah,
both of those things can happen.
Yeah, should be able to have both.
Yep.
I agree. Well, in 26, Dansby Swanson will make $28 million. Yee, yee, yee. So that's a big number. Jameson Taillon will make 18. Matt Boyd will make 17. Shota Imanaga will make 15.2. So they're going to have to find, you know, some cheapness at a bunch of other spots.
Is that really the spot that you want to go cheap on?
What, right field power hitter?
Yeah.
No.
I do not either.
No. Nico Hoerner, by the way, will make 12 next year. Ian
Happ. He's going to be an awesome Dodger.
Nico Hoerner? You shut your mouth.
He's going to be a great Ray.
He plays good enough to be a Brewer. That's what I
sure
realized.
Does.
That guy.
The Giants still throw money around like that?
Oh, yeah, for the hometown kid?
Yeah.
Bring him back.
And the Giants kind of like said, all right, we're done with this season. Let's figure out what we're going to do in the offseason here.
Yeah, and the Giants have difficulties, you know, drawing big-time superstars to go there. I
mean, Which is weird.
I know. But Willie Adames went. That's part of the thought process behind the Devers trade, is that we don't think that we can get a free agent.
We'll trade for one.
Yeah.
We'll ask him to play first base. He'll do it.
Nico would have fit in nicely on the Buster Posey, Bruce Bochy title teams. Wouldn't he have? Who was that shortstop? I loved their shortstop. The lefty. His name.
Crawford?
Yes, Brandon Crawford.
I was thinking about the other guy.
Juan Uribe.
We're always thinking about Juan Uribe.
I mean, most of the show, you guys are doing that. Like, me and Alex are trying to make other things happen for the good of the show, and you guys are just throwing out Juan Uribe stuff. I understand. And Seiya Suzuki will make 19 mil. I mean, there's a decent amount of big ticket items.
The 19
there.
Mil on Seiya, though, seems sure. pretty efficient.
But then you're out of the Hap deal after next year. You're out of the Nico deal.
After next year, you're out of a lot of deals.
Yeah, you are.
Because there's not going to be baseball.
What's Kyle Schwarber going to ask for to come back?
Man, that guy.
A non-tender.
I'm going to say it now. I'm going to say it. You guys ready? I think they might have screwed that one up, non-tendering that guy.
Here's a question
for you.
They
can make things right. You can hit 500 in a Cubs uniform.
PCA, I think I saw the latest odds that he is plus 1,300 for National League MVP. Do we need to start talking about Kyle Schwarber as the second favorite to win MVP in the National League?
Kyle Schwarber is number one on the, I think it's MLB.com, does the rankings of hitters. He's number one on that thing.
He's very hitterish.
It's a good list to be number one.
Yeah, it's a good
hitters.
One. Hitters in the sport I play.
Unfortunately, the guy who's going to win MVP is like number two on that hitter list and number 10 on the pitcher list.
Shohei Ohtani threw a pitch 100 miles an hour and hit a home run at more than 100 miles an hour yesterday. Yeah. It was the fifth time he's done that in the same game in his career.
He's really good at baseball.
He's
so good. Shohei Ohtani is the best kid in your league. And the fact that he's the best kid in your league in the major leagues is astonishing. It's astonishing that someone would be that good at this point on both sides.
Like all the parents would be asking for the birth certificate.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, he is like
that six. Kid's not 12.
He's 6'5" and, oh, he can do all the things?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be able to do all the things.
Oh, he can pitch too? That's ridiculous.
It's not fair.
No, it is not
and
fair.
And it's so awesome to watch.
So to summarize, Cubs shouldn't have let Kyle Schwarber go. Nico Hoerner is going to be a great giant someday. And Kyle Schwarber or Kyle Tucker could be here with a contract that starts with a 4. And I'll be picking up dinner. Thanks, everybody.
We can ask John Morosi about all of these things next on The Score.